Hello and welcome to a brand spanking new edition of Five and Out. I'm Wes.
I'm Steve.
And this week we have a very grapple-centric top five for you. Steve, what is that sexy, sexy top five?
Oh yeah! We're doing our top five for our Create a Wrestler.
That's right.
So we're taking five components of our favorite wrestlers and we're combining them into one ultra wrestler named Steve the Wrestler.
Or Wes the Wrestler.
With only one for sure caveat is that you have to have a finishing move.
That's right. So without further ado, let's start the show. Steven, you're a new man. You're looking great.
What? Am I new?
Yes.
Am I refurbished or am I new?
You got Metal Gear Solid 5. It's a new chapter of your life, and it looks like it's changed you for the better.
Man, this game is... It is awesome so far.
Yeah?
It is really awesome.
Tell me all about it.
This is what I will tell you. No, I mean, as it is with Metal Gear. I mean, you always have to choose your words carefully with
Metal Gear.
Sure.
15 words or less.
Right? So I'm not terribly far into the game. But let me tell you my initial experience for those who have not played it. The opening prologue is awesome. Mm-hmm. And you will, I think the common consensus coming out of that prologue is saying, I don't know what the hell just happened, but it was fucking cool.
Like, awesome.
Kind of typical Metal Gear in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But then something else that's just as awesome is you realize that you are basically playing an open world Metal Gear game.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a mix of obviously Metal Gear mechanics, but you're in Afghanistan, so it's kind of got this feeling of Red Dead Redemption in there because you can ride a horse.
Sure.
And there's
sure.
some like collectibles of like plants and things that you can use for other stuff, and you come upon, then there's a little bit of Far Cry 3 kind of thing where you come across these guard posts and you can choose to go by them, you can choose to take the guard post.
Okay.
Sometimes they have things that are valuable to you.
And Solid Snake has jungle powers as well.
Jungle powers, which so I just tranquilized a bear.
Oh, did you?
Before I came over here. There's wild animals.
Was it in real life or in the game?
Oh, it was in real life. But
okay.
So I brought him back to my house. I was like, bear, check out this Metal Gear. And the bear's like, I'm like, right? Right?
Bear, I got to go do the podcast. You keep that seat warm for me.
But do not advance the game. You can go collect plants or something, but do not advance the game.
Hey, bears have a lot of negative things attached to them.
Yeah.
They can sit idle in a game for hours.
And I just enjoyed his game, a little jar of honey, and he's chilling. He's guarding it. And then there is another component that I haven't really gotten into yet in the game that much, but it's...
Stealth?
Dude, I'm trying. Okay, component real quick.
Sorry.
Is it's base management, kind of.
Okay.
So you've got this oil rig in the middle of the ocean. That's your home base. And one of these really cool mechanics in the game is that you can, enemy soldiers and various things that you find, you can basically put them on this kind of like parachute thing. It's like a reverse parachute almost.
Okay.
That it captures them and it sends them back to your base.
Really?
So if you find these... a scientist guy out in the, you're doing a mission, or a guy that's really like, he can translate between Russian and in English, you can knock him out, you can put him on this rig thing, it takes it back to your base, and now he's part of your military, if you will.
Really?
So you can call in reinforcements from the base, you can call in supply drops from the base, and then you start adding on to your base to make them research things faster or more effectively, or bring, so it's a very, very different Metal Gear experience so far, but it still feels very Metal Gear as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, dude, I'm trying so hard for the stealth stuff, and I'm doing pretty good because they added a mechanic that's basically like bullet time real quick. So if you're sneaking and a dude sees you, the exclamation point goes off and like, oh, and you turn, it gives you just a maybe 3 seconds where it's kind of slow-mo and you can – if you shoot him in the head or with the tranquilizer, well, with anything. And at that point, it won't sound the alarm.
Mm-hmm.
It'll, because you've knocked him out fast enough. So that has helped me a lot.
Because
Because it used to be, the guys would see me, I'd knock them out real quick, then I'd just have to go hide until the alarm went away. But so now I'm, although I was, so that happened, I unfortunately had to shoot like three guys in a row real fast. Like,
yeah.
Like I said, I'm doing real good on the stealth. I'm not killing a lot of guys.
Hey, but how's the bear doing on stealth?
Bear is, at this point, bear is edge of the seat next to me. And he's like, Rawr! I was like, I know, dude. Almost had to kill that guy. But then my gun, like the suppressor, burned out. So the next shot was like, bam! And I was like, and then everyone's like, what was that? I was like, God damn it!
God damn it.
Son of a bitch. But it's awesome, dude. What I really need is for my wife to have to go out of town.
Like, okay.
That's what I, cause what I need is just a 2-day beer and pizza with Metal Gear. No one bother me. Leave me alone. Like, that's what I want.
Okay, I thought we were starting a whole new side of conversation. And what I really need is for Holly to leave.
I need her to go. Go away. Yeah. No, what I want to get in the world of Metal Gear and not leave for a while.
Sure, sure.
Because it's one of those games, too, that, it you know, unlike a Rayman Legends or a, like, oh, I'm gonna do a level real quick, come back out. Metal Gear, you know, you're in that, like, sneaking mode, and mm-hmm. I try to get really into this game when I'm playing, and I do. So then when it's, I do it for 20 minutes, I have to pop out and go, like, put the pizza in the oven, or, you know, like, go do some dishes or whatever, and then you come back. It's not, I want to be in there. I want to be in that world, don't want to be disturbed by it. And it's great, man. It is awesome so far.
Sure, sure. How far do you think you are in it?
3%.
Three? And you played it for how long?
10 hours.
Wow. So a whole lot more game ahead of you. Is it open world like Far Cry? How does that work with the open world?
It's awesome, dude. There's a bunch of, you know, regular missions, of course. I've done 4 or 5. But as you and I are one to play, there's side ops, you know, side missions you can do. So immediately I start running and go and do those.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. That's how I always do it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you're in this part of Afghanistan, and you just, like, there's long, you know, roads in between, in the desert, in between, like, these guard posts, and then there's, like, small towns.
Sure. Riddler trophies.
Riddler trophies. I mean, it's awesome, man. It's awesome. Really, really good. I can't wait to play even more of it.
Well, while you were playing Metal Gear 5, I was playing Telltale's Game of Thrones series.
Oh, yeah? How is that?
It's good. It's a Telltale game. So if you don't like that style of gaming, you're not going to like this, because it's the same exact thing. Story's great. Characters are great. They tell the centers around a family that's not prominently featured in the Game of Thrones, not in the TV series at all. In the books, they're mentioned a few times, I think. It centers around the Forresters.
Is this a powerful kind of family, like the Targaryens? I mean, maybe obviously not that powerful, but
no, they're not too powerful, but they are a prominent house, but they're not like the Wardens of the North or the Wardens of the East or anything like that. Centers around this group of characters, and they're all very likable. But it's interesting to me playing this game, because other Telltale games, for dialogue options, you generally have the nice option, the mean option, and then something in between. Well, obviously you want to go like nice or the in between. But in this Telltale Game of Thrones version, it's like the nice option is generally construed as weak, and the mean option is construed as strength. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And to put that into another perspective, we all know what happens to nice characters in Game of Thrones. So, and if you choose the in-between option, some characters are like, you gotta pick one side. It's like, so, like, my general playstyle is being effed with right now. So, it's a new experience, and I was honestly edge of my seat. It gave me a lot of anxiety playing it, actually, because all my general modes of play, or my MO for Telltale, was thrown out of whack here. But it's really good. I recommend it if you like Telltale or if you like Game of Thrones.
It's interesting you say that, because I was just thinking about this week. I saw a little comic thing online where the title was something like, I'm getting geared up to play as a renegade in Mass Effect, which basically a bad guy in Mass Effect. So the same thing where you have the good option, the bad option, and some, you know, sometimes something in the middle. So one of the character walks up to you, is like, it's like, Commander, may I have a minute of your time? And he responds, he's like, I don't have time for your bullshit right now or something. And he's like, oh, sorry to disturb you. And they show the guy playing the game, and he's crying, hugging the screen. He's like, I'm so sorry! Because that's how... I love the idea of games where I can choose my response. I always, always play where I'm... I tell them yes, and where I am nice. Because I feel like if I say no, then I might get some money, but they'll never give me more more missions and stuff.
Yeah.
So... the idea of it's great. I'm glad they're in games. But I never use them unless I have a friend over.
Yeah.
Because, like, if a friend's over, like, come on, let's tell them to fuck off, right? Yeah!
Exactly, yeah.
But when I'm by myself, never.
Yeah.
Commander, may I have a minute of your time? Absolutely. Come on in. Have a glass of tea. How are your children? Good. Great.
Sure.
There's 30 pages of dialogue before I even get to, he's like, I was just wondering if I could use the spaceship this weekend. Of course. Please do. Please. Here's some money. Here's some gas money.
Yeah. And in this game, like, if you choose a nice option, yes, come in, have some tea, like, one character will be like, yes, that was the good option. And everyone else will be like, quit being such a freaking pussy and do something.
Kill him!
And then if you do the mean option, most people are like, yeah! There's one guy like, well, I'm disappointed in you.
Kill him!
So yeah, it's interesting. I just played the first episode because the sixth and final episode should be coming out this month.
Oh, cool.
So I'll hopefully just be able to rip right through the whole thing.
Sure. Okay. Is this a platy if you beat it? Or
it is a platy.
Are you playing it on PS4?
Yes.
All right.
Good stuff, man. Good stuff. I recommend it.
Is that how you play those kind of games as well? Normally the nice option?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Dude. Even the first... here's a confession for you. The first season of The Walking Dead, Telltales, I did make some dick options for a few chapters. I felt so bad about it, I went back and started the game over.
Yep. I've done something similar. Or when you try to press the button, but it, like, slips and you do the asshole way. And I'm like, no!
Oh, no!
I didn't mean that!
Yeah.
No!
Especially during a really important part of the game. Oh, yeah.
Yep. I like when they make the options not so clear. When it's... because there's sometimes, at least in Mass Effect 1, where it's not just good and bad. It is... or, like, all the good ones are, like, in blue writing and the bad ones are in red. Mm-hmm. And so I read the text of what it says, like, the asshole way. I'm like, but I kind of feel that way. It's like, so I'm going to say that. Or, like, or you read the good one. Like, oh, yeah, that's the way. But he says it in a completely different way. It's like, yeah, I'll go with you. It's like, okay, I'll go with you. And then he says it. He's like, yeah, I'll go with you. You're like, no.
Like, God damn it.
I didn't know that was, like, the sarcastic dick way to say it.
Like, there should be, like, a little parentheses, like, sarcastic dick. Yeah. So, yeah, man, I'm very excited about it. Yeah, but that's all I've been really watching and playing. What about you?
I hammered something else off the Academy Award nominee list. It was from a couple years ago.
But did you finally watch Whiplash?
I've not yet.
I
know. I don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
I'm so upset with myself. But we watched... they just put it on Netflix. They just put on Up in the Air with George Clooney and Vera Farmiga.
Vera Farmiga.
Farmiga.
Not Farmiga.
Whatever, man. She is an attractive woman.
She is.
She is an attractive woman. George Clooney was nominated for Best Picture.
He is an attractive man.
He is a... man, he's an attractive man.
According to you, he is an attractive picture.
Right? He was nominated for Best Picture and Best Silver Fox.
Yep.
No, Best Picture, Best Actor, and two supporting actress nominations in that.
Judy Greer?
No.
Okay.
The girl from Pitch Perfect and everyone Anna Kendrick.
Okay.
Anna Kendrick. She also was nominated.
Okay.
Wife wanted to watch this movie. I was like, all right, whatever. I know it's supposed to be good. It's really good, man.
Man, your wife runs the gamut on movies she wants to watch.
Oh,
she'll watch it like Zombievers.
Yep.
Expendables 3.
Yep.
And then she'll pick Up in the Air.
Yep.
Man. Okay.
Range, man.
Range.
She's got range.
Whew. Man, she keeps you on your toes.
And what I wanted to watch last night was First Blood Rambo.
Sure.
Which, have you seen that, by the way?
I've seen part of it. Like
that
the first
movie
half hour.
Is phenomenal. And I'll be watching it with or without her.
Ah,
so
fair enough.
Take that.
But anyway, so Vera Farmiga.
Man, she's good looking.
Mm-hmm.
Man, she's good looking.
Thank you.
Man, she's good looking.
All right, so Up in the Air.
Man, she's good looking.
Was that any good?
Yeah, man, I really liked it a lot. It's
what is it about?
Here's your little Cliff's notes on it. George Clooney is a man who is a bachelor through and through. Like, he's a lone wolf kind of guy. His job is he gets hired to go places and fire people. Mm. So he's in the air, in transit, like 300 days of the year. Or
Jesus.
Something like that. And then some things in his life start changing. I'll leave it at that.
Well, you have my interest piqued.
Yeah, he's a man who is completely self-reliant and is happy that way, and then some things happen in his life that change, and he may start to feel differently about
that. Does he start going through the change?
The change.
Mm-hmm.
George Clooney's voice drops.
No!
Starts getting horrible acne halfway through the movie.
Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah, it's a good watch, man. It's a good watch. I dug it.
Cool.
I gave it 5 stars on Netflix.
Wow, look at you.
I did. And over for the real rating, I would probably give it a very, very solid 86.
Well, sir, speaking of up in the air, let's talk about last week's top five.
Yeah, many of those fights, they didn't take place in the air.
I can't say that, but...
Except for Tony Jaa flying through the air.
Oh, with the greatest of ease.
Oh, sorry, speaking of Tony Jaa flying through the air with the greatest of ease real quick.
Uh-huh.
This last weekend, my wife and I went out with a couple of friends, did a little weekend trip.
Are you friends with Tony Jaa?
Are you familiar?
Yeah.
I gotta tell you, man, he's rough to travel with. He's like, turn right, elbow to the head.
I thought it would be awesome, like, hey, Tony, can you get me a beer? And he's like, yeah! And then he, like, bursts through the wall with his knees.
Actually, it's terrible if it's in your own home.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
It's like could you imagine having Tony Jaa and the Kool-Aid Man over?
Oh, my God. That home isn't standing.
It's done. It's over. But we went to, we stayed at a hotel. So we decided to use the pool. We're like, damn it, we're paying for it. What the hell? Let's go use the pool.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife and I, doing a little roughhousing in the pool, just like you're not supposed to do. So that allowed, wrestling around the pool, man. You know?
Okay. Sorry. My mind went somewhere else.
Yeah. We decided fucking in the pool.
Yeah.
No, just, wrestling around the pool a little bit,
sure.
You do, having fun in the pool. And I realized I could somewhat do Tony Jaa flying elbows in the pool.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was super fun.
Did you do the high flying, like, knee kicks
to
the face?
See, the thing is, I couldn't get the knee out, out from the water to make
sure.
It look cool. We were in the deeper end.
Sure.
But the elbows, they were coming fast and from long distances.
Well, that's great, man.
It was fun. And Holly's never seen any Tony Jaa, so she was like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm exploding your head with elbows.
Just picture this, but so much cooler.
But, 39%, okay, 390% more awesome.
But as we were talking about, the last week was our top five fist fights. And so we got a bunch of emails written in from last week. Steve, we got over a dozen emails written in, and I wish we had time to talk about each and every single one, but I picked out a few for us to talk about this week. First of all, we're going to start with Dennis here. He is a first-time writer in.
Well, welcome, Dennis. Thank you. What do you like in the fight category, Dennis?
His number five is Angel versus Spike from Angel Season 5, Episode 8, Destiny. Thank you, Dennis, for mentioning this, because if you don't know, I am forbidden from anything Joss.
Well, let me ask you this. If you were not forbidden, would this have made your top five?
Nope, because I wouldn't have thought about it.
Ah!
But it's number four is Solid Snake versus Liquid Ocelot from Metal Gear Solid 4, Guns of the Patriots.
I just rewatched it from this email, and man, I forgot how awesome that fight is.
I forget how awesome video game cut fight scenes are.
It's good, man. Real good.
They don't happen very much, but when they do, it's like, oh, man, that was really freaking cool.
There's this awesome kind of – I know we already talked about Metal Gear today, but there's this awesome moment in that fight where at the end of Metal Gear Solid 1 for PlayStation, you fight Liquid Snake on top of the Metal Gear, and that it's this really climactic fight. And then this fight – kind of mirrors that original fight, and there's a lot of things from Metal Gear Solid 4 that mirror Metal Gear Solid 1, including this fight, which is awesome. And there's one point where in unison, they both do the same moves to each other. It is because they are both clones of the same guy, of Big Boss, of their father, which is really, really, really well done. It's awesome.
It's good stuff, man. His number three is Tex versus the Reds and Blues from Red versus Blue Revelation, Episode 10.
Not seen it.
Are you a fan of Red versus Blue?
I'm not a fan. I've just seen little bits and pieces here and there.
I have started rewatching it because I kind of fell off around season three. I just finished season six, so I'm not sure if I'm there yet, but I look forward to this fight.
Cool.
But his number two is Daredevil versus the Russian mob hallway fight from Daredevil season one, episode two, Cut Man. What a great freaking fight. I didn't even think about it. It's awesome, dude. And you just started watching Daredevil last night.
I watched the first episode of Daredevil last night, so I'm going to hold off at least just for a day before watching this fight, because it is the next episode. But I think on every single email that we got, that was on, either on the list or as an honorable mention.
Because
so I'm excited.
Not only is it a great fight, it's one single shot. And you'll see it. I'm not going to talk anymore about
awesome.
It. Awesome. Number one is Rama versus the Assassin from the Raid 2 Brandel. Barandai? Brandel? Steve, help me here. I'm floundering.
I haven't seen the Raid 2 yet.
Okay.
I've not seen it yet. That's why I'm not going to watch that fight yet either.
All right.
Because,
okay.
As you guys know, I love the Raid, and I will be watching the Raid 2 very shortly.
Mm-hmm. But Brian writes in his top five best fights. His number five is White Light Unmorphed Fight from the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Really?
He says, I know, this might seem strange, but just watch the clip. And I did. They've changed some since, but in the beginning, Power Rangers wasn't afraid to let their actors fight. In this clip, we get to see the original five defeat a group of bad guys without using their powers. You even see a bit of their personalities in the different ways that they fight. And I agree. Watching this, I watched this before you showed up, Steve. Watching this, if you remember, this is back when the Power Rangers were vaguely racist, when like the black guy was the Black Ranger and the Asian woman was the Yellow Ranger.
Yeah.
And, you know. But so this was, you got to see how the black guy was fighting like all cool and stuff, and the nerdy white guy was had the ooh kicks.
I love the ooh kicks.
But and then like you have the leader and his fighting is all precise and every movement is very measured and
authoritative.
Stuff like that. That's right. But yeah, it is pretty cool how they let their personality shine through. So yeah, good pick, man. His number four is a hotel fight from Haywire, which I almost made you watch.
But I have seen it due to our just beatdown of a discussion of Gina Carano from Haywire versus The Bride from a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. His number three is the elevator fight from Captain America, The Winter Soldier.
That elevator scene is awesome.
It's freaking great, dude. His number two is the hallway fight from Netflix's Daredevil.
There it is.
His another number two. And his number one is the Who Am I rooftop fight,
which we just watched, which if you've not seen, just classic Jackie Chan doing his thing, fighting two dudes
mm-hmm.
on top of a building. And it is incredible, man.
It's a really long fight scene. It's really cool because the two dudes that he's fighting have different fighting styles. And he fights one, and then he fights the other, and then he fights them both at the same time. And it's really freaking cool just to see old school Jackie Chan.
Yeah, and it's nice too seeing Jackie Chan not use a ton of found items for the fighting, which he does quite a bit of. This is just Jackie Chan versus two dudes going just, karate on karate. You know, Jackie Chan is so good, man.
Mm-hmm.
He's so good. And all these guys we talk about Tony Jaa and the guy from The Raid, and they need to give so much credit to Jackie Chan, as well as Jackie Chan, to Bruce Lee and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But Jackie Chan is just the man. He's so good, man.
And watching these fights again, it just astounds me how in the movies, people can just get hit in the face.
Over and over again.
And if I ever got hit in the face, I'd be out of commission, man.
For a week.
For a week. After that first punch, I'd be like, ow!
Oh, no.
Stop!
Some of these roundhouse kicks these dudes are throwing out, I'm out. I'm in a coma.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
Oh, yeah.
That's part of the reason why we both liked They Live so much, is because those hits land. And they have, they land with power, and there's repercussions to those hits.
Mm-hmm.
So, nothing against Jackie Chan, but man can take a hit.
Yeah. Jeff Beasley writes in his top five. His number five is Captain America, The Winter Soldier, Captain versus Batroc, which is the he says...
George St. Pierre.
Yes. He says, okay, so this might not be one of the greatest fights ever put to film, but it speaks to me personally because I grew up in Quebec learning Quebec French. Hearing it spoken in a Marvel Universe movie by my favorite MMA fighter in a pretty kick-ass fight scene with Captain America, fucking right.
Cool, man.
Yeah, dude.
Cool.
His number four, surprise, surprise, Daredevil hallway fight.
Man.
Mm-hmm. His number three is Warrior Brendan Conlon versus Koba, which is, man, every fight in the movie Warrior tells a separate story, and they're all amazing.
Really, really good. And actually, this is the second appearance by that guy from the hallway or the elevator scene in Captain America 2. The guy, like the head of security guy.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's the coach in Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you've not seen Warrior, go see it, man. It's great.
And I'm not going to lie, watching this fight scene again where he comes in between the rounds and he's like forehead to forehead with Brendan Conlon, totally thought they were going to make out.
I mean, maybe in the sequel. We'll see.
Yeah, sure. His number two is a Raid 2 with a warehouse fight. Again, we haven't seen it.
Not yet, but soon, soon.
His number one is Banshee for the TV show Banshee, Lucas Hood versus Zachariah Sanchez.
We also just watched this one. So why don't you read his description of this fight real quick, Wes?
Sure, sure. Let's see. If you haven't seen Banshee and you like action movies, you should correct this immediately. Almost every episode has an excellently filmed hand-to-hand combat scene, and just about everything else about the show is damn good, too. Also, boobs!
Also, boobs.
I am baffled as to why it's not one of the most popular shows on TV. Oh, right, because it's on Cinemax. This is one of the best parts of the first season and the best TV fistfight I can think of. There are other scenes from it that I could have just as easily put here, but this particular one is the most memorable to me.
Pretty good fight here. You got cop versus MMA fighter, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And cop fights dirty.
From the opening, the punch. Like, yeah. He sucker punches him out of nowhere.
Yeah, he's biting. He's mm-hmm. punching in the groin.
He hits him over the head with a bottle?
He bites his ear.
Oh, no!
So we obviously have not watched the full episode, but it sounds like this dude is, you know, he's hit women and that kind of thing. He's obviously a bad dude.
Yeah.
But this, I mean, I don't know. Just watching this fight, I kind of feel bad for the villain a little bit.
Yeah, and at the end when, you know, spoiler alert, the cop stands victorious, everyone around him is like,
oh my God.
Ugh.
That's so weird. I've never been in a fight. But there's something so interesting to me when a person crosses that line and you no longer look at them the same way anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting thing to happen.
Sure. What if you saw me get into a fight and I totally kick their ass and beat them to a bloody pulp?
Well,
a la the narrator versus Jared Leto in Fight Club.
Okay, so you're destroying a person.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those things, man. I would not be able to look at you the same.
Yeah?
If you just turned a guy's face into mush.
Would you yell at me as much on the podcast?
No.
Well, I need to find some guy's face to turn to mush.
I got a few people.
Oh,
I got
good,
a few
good.
People. You can mush them up.
But Michael Vanderpool writes in his top five. His number five is, since nobody put any video games, I'm giving you 2 for 5. The opening bar fight in Uncharted 3, which is a good fight scene.
It is a good fight scene, yeah.
And just for Steve, Metal Gear Solid 4, two aged and beaten warriors with a grudge beating the hell out of each other on top of a nuclear submarine.
It's so good, man. Thank you for putting that on. You're not the only one to write it in, and I'm so glad I rewatched it.
His number four, Homer Simpson versus Bart's big brother in the season 4 episode, Brother from the Same Planet.
I don't think I've ever seen that episode.
I don't think I have either.
Huh.
This is one thing we got to check it out.
Yeah.
His number three is Jackie Chan versus Jet Li in Forbidden Kingdom.
Yes.
Yes, good, good. His number two is The Raid 2, the final fight.
Yes.
His number one is, let's see, he says, I normally try to pick different choices than what you guys give, but this one just has to be my number one. They Live, Roddy Piper versus Keith David.
It's so good, man. We talked about it last week.
It's good, it's good. But guys, like I said, I really wish we had time to talk about every single email that you guys wrote in or every single top five that you guys wrote in, because you guys give us so many more things that are dreamt of in our heaven and earth.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, Wes, okay.
You just like that? Pulled in a little Shakespeare.
Yeah. Well done, sir. Well done.
Was it well done? I feel like I stumbled a lot.
I mean, it was done. If you completed it.
Yeah, I got through it.
But speaking of fights.
Do you want to get into a fight?
Let's mush some faces in a safe way.
Speaking of fist fights and people who get into those fist fights, Steven, what is our top five?
A, don't call me Steven.
All right.
And B, our top five this week is what we're going to call our create a wrestler.
That's right.
So we're taking, we get to create our own wrestler, and we're taking five components from all the wrestlers from WCW, WWF, WWE, taking whatever it is we like from those particular wrestlers to create our own super wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
The only caveat is that you have to have a finishing move.
That's right.
Other things, the other four can be whatever you want.
Sure.
But you got to have that finisher.
Well, I'll tell you what, why don't I go first? For some reason, when I started picking and choosing different things, I kind of molded together just a sex-crazed wrestler. Let's start with my number five.
Oh, okay.
My number five, it starts out with Shawn Michaels' entrance music.
Oh, okay.
I'm just a sexy boy, sexy boy. And, like, he prances down the aisle. That didn't sound good.
That's isn't it? I know I'm sexy. I'm not your boy toy.
Well, yeah. But just picturing him prancing down the aisle doesn't really send frights down any spines, if you will.
No, it does not.
No.
But does it drop those panties?
Yes, it does.
Yes, sir. So you're taking Shawn Michaels' entrance music.
Yes, and his entrance, the way he just dances down the aisle.
Gallops.
Sexily. Yes. How he just, sets the women's panties ablaze in the audience.
They are dropped and then lit on fire.
Yes.
Is he... So let me... I don't think this is going to be later in top five. Tell me physically about your wrestler. Are you wearing, like, Shawn Michaels-style pants? Are you wearing, like, the little kind of, like, Speedo-ish thing? Are you wearing, like, trunks?
I think it's the Shawn Michaels-style skin-tight pants.
Leather pants.
Mm-hmm. But topless, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Dude, no one wants a wrestler. I'm not creating a wrestler who wears a shirt. Not gonna have it.
Yeah, he's got the skin-tight pants. He's smaller in stature. We'll get to that later.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So I'll say my number five is also my entrance music.
Okay.
But I'm looking – my wrestler is looking to not to – parade down the alleyway here.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking to send fear. He's looking to be there, and the crowd, as soon as you hear it, the crowd erupts because shit's about to go down.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm taking the entrance from Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Okay.
That, most importantly, that glass break.
What's that like?
Because, like, the music is fine. It's kind of just like driving, kind of menacing slightly, but it's that glass break, man.
Thing,
and him just generally like running down the ramp, or him just showing up. So that glass break is the best, because immediately, as soon as you hear it, you're like, oh shit, something's about to go down.
And it's always great when he would interrupt other people, like if Vince McMahon back in that era was like giving a douchebag speech, and then
he runs. Yes, it's the best, because it's so sudden. Because the thing about the Shawn Michaels and the Undertaker intro and that kind of stuff, they're cool, but they are drawn out, in my opinion. Like, they take a long time. They slowly saunter down the ramp, and then they get up into the ring and kind of stretch.
I don't know if the Undertaker is slowly sauntering.
Fair. But I think it's kind of a sexy intro. Lighting some panties on fire, the Undertaker.
Oh, yeah.
Big bells ringing.
Oh, yeah, with the druids coming out.
Yeah.
Oh,
ladies
yeah.
love it, dude.
Those panties dropped. They're ablaze.
Dude, that's what the ladies want.
The dead man.
The dead man. But see, the Undertaker's one is so menacing, especially when he's got the lightning bolts and the fire shoots off the explosions. Super cool.
Mm-hmm.
But that, ksh, and here we go.
Yeah.
It's just this immediate, it ramps everything up to 10 right off the bat.
Yeah.
So I love that part of that song.
And when he enters, his eyes are on that ring.
Yeah.
He does not look to the audience at all. He doesn't showboat. And people, I remember when I used to watch wrestling, people would stick their hands out for a high five, and at most he'd slap them away. You know what I mean?
Best
just
man.
Get out the fuck out of my way.
So the song itself is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm really paying for here, where I'm putting my money, is that glass break intro.
Sure.
That's just the best.
All right, let's move on to my number four. I want my wrestler to have The Rock's charisma.
Ooh, nice.
And for lack of a better term, the improvisational skills. You know what I mean? He's able to take that microphone. He's able just to spur, like, just drive the crowd nuts and, like, get the crowd all into it, and they're cheering for him. If another wrestler throws something at him, he's able to just roll with it and keep the energy going. You know what I mean? Just that charisma.
It's actually my number four as well.
Really?
But I called it, what I decided to label it, was the mic skills.
Okay.
Of said The Rock.
Because
this is one of those kind of obvious things. It's almost a cheat because as long as I know, I didn't watch a lot of wrestling in the 80s and that sort of thing, but.
Yeah. You're lost, bro.
I mean, his control of the ring when it's just him and that mic and the audience, he's the best by far that I have ever seen. And when I'm making my character, when it's Steve the Wrestler up there, that's my awesome wrestling name.
Yeah.
Steve the Wrestler. Excuse me. I want to be like that, you know, where when you're flipping through the channel, you're like, well, The Rock's talking. I better shut my pie hole, jabroni face here and let The Rock spit some truth at me.
Yeah. When you think about The Rock, he was able to make just the stupidest phrase, the most electrifying phrase in sports entertainment. If you smell what The Rock is cooking.
What Steve the Wrestler is baking.
But when you think about The Rock, everything he does is just electric.
Yeah.
He turned, again, the stupidest things. He turned an elbow drop
into
the most electrifying move in sports entertainment.
Yep.
It's just, what? You can't do that. It's an elbow drop. But every time I watched it, I would stand up, I would rise up out of my chair and start cheering.
Yep. As he pulls off the elbow pad, flings it, does the crosses with his arm.
That's right.
It's one of those things, like, when you're a kid and your mom walks in, like, what are you doing? And you're, like, you're reenacting the people's elbow. You're like, Mom, only the most electric move in sports. That is not electric. You look, are you some sort of weird conductor of an orchestra? What are you doing? Like, Mom, shut up. It's awesome. He's, like you said, man, he's just, that when you see other guys, he's so far and away the best that when other guys come out and handle the mic, you're like, okay, all right. Their pauses are, you're waiting for when The Rock, like, those pauses, you're like, oh, yes, like,
yeah,
he
yeah.
uses them. He's like, he draws you in with that. He's just so good. He's just so good.
And like you were just saying, like, when most of the people grab the mic, they're just like, start yelling, like, I'm gonna kick your ass, I'm gonna blah, blah, blah. But The Rock, man, he's just like, you're just get your jabroni ass back into the jabroni back room, you jabroni. Like, yes.
Into your jabroni holder. Yeah. See, this is why I don't have the electric mic skills.
That's right.
Because I tell people to go back to their jabroni holder.
That's right. If only you and I had a modicum of mic skills.
God, imagine.
My number three. This is where the sex craze comes into it.
I'm looking forward to this part.
My number three is Val Venus's taunt.
Oh.
Do you even know who Val Venus is?
Actually, when you said sex craze wrestler, I almost immediately said, are you creating Val Venus?
Yeah.
I know his intro, he came down, he pulled the towel off, and I did like a hip gyration.
And he had to have, like, either just like three bratwursts tied together in his pants. Or something, because damn, dude.
Packing some heat.
That's right.
His old jabroni holder.
His jabroni holder. But I don't want his entrance, you know, that, hello, ladies. No, I don't want that. Get that out of here. I want his taunt, which is when he stands over the other wrestlers lying prone on the mat. He stands over him, and he just kind of, like, does this grinding motion over the other wrestler. There's nothing more insulting than that. You know what I mean? Especially when all the women in their in the audience, you know, their panties are already ablaze.
If they're not having sex with The Undertaker, all of them right now.
That's right. But I don't know. What's after the panties being ablaze? They rub the ashes on their face.
Ah! take her. Take me.
Take. Oh, boy. But, yeah, man, I want that time. Nothing more insulting than that.
So, I mean, so that means once your Wes the Wrestler character makes it to WrestleMania, does that mean to up it you do a Halo teabag? Is that what you do?
Oh, yeah. Gotta do that.
Gotta. I love it. Gotta do that. Obviously. Gotta do that.
That's right.
I'm so excited to drop my jabroni holder on the face of whomever it may be.
Maybe it won't be like a Halo teabag, but instead of standing over the prone wrestler, it's going to be like on my knees over the pro wrestler's face.
Ugh.
Yeah.
God, you as you go, this wrestler gets more and more homoerotic.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. So you want to do a little pelvic grinding over your opponent.
I mean, I can't be blamed for wanting to do that, right?
No, you can only be encouraged to do it.
That's right.
So once you turn someone's face to mush, you're like, oh, yeah, I wanted to destroy something beautiful. And then wiggle my jabroni around right by his face.
Pretty much, yeah.
Because that's your outro music, right?
Yep. That's it.
I
mean,
I know I'm sexy. I'm not your boy toy. And then I wiggle my jabroni around your face.
I mean, I think by the end of every single one of my matches, half the women in the audience are going to be sent to the hospital from cardiac arrest.
This woman has had so many orgasms in such a short period of time. She's lucky to be alive.
Oh, this woman's vagina exploded.
She's got jabroniitis right now. There's been a rash of it lately.
Oh, God. Not terminal jabroniitis. Quick, get her family in here.
Who is that? Is that Wes the Wrestler? Get him out of here!
Oh, God. Oh, man. Steve, we're getting out of hand over here.
Man, that's what we're doing. Yeah. Well, my number three is, for lack of a better term, I'm going to call it the extremeness of Mick Foley.
Okay.
So as we know, he has done some of the most legendary matches. The Hell in the Cell match with The Undertaker coming to mind immediately, where he got thrown through the top of the cell onto the mat below. What, his tooth came through basically his nostril?
Yeah.
I mean, and as Mankind, he was just, he would hit anyone with anything, and he would, more importantly, be hit with anything and still come back for more. And there's something special about that, about being the dude that, I mean, everyone can hit someone with a chair, everyone can be hit with a chair, but no one did it like Mick Foley.
No one
did it like Mankind.
Oh, yeah.
And if I'm creating this character, I want him to be able to go turn this baby to 11. To be that guy that no one is going to out-hit him with something. He can jump off the highest thing. He can be thrown into the thing that's on fire, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's something memorable about that. There's something, I think, kind of like brings the people to you a little bit.
Sure.
So I want that. I want the extremeness. I don't want to be dressed in a giant brown burlap sack thing like Mankind.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't want to do the gross mandible claw because it's just the grossest finisher.
See, that was one of the finishers that I thought of for my
mandible claw.
Because it's so extreme.
So extreme.
It's so simple, but yet so effective.
So the extremeness I'm looking for is basically pain tolerance and willingness to go to the extreme physically in matches.
Kind of a side note. Have you ever read his book, Mick Foley's
book? No, I've not.
It's such an interesting read, dude.
Okay. Right.
Especially his first book, by the way, that details his first, how he got into the career of wrestling, and then all the way through.
Is it
how
called Have a Nice Day or something?
That might be his second book.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, the first book is so interesting, and it talks about like how his body is built for that sort of thing. Like he has got a really broad flat back, so we can easily take chair hits.
Sure.
And just, it's so interesting.
What a strange thing to somehow realize in your life. You know what this back's good for? Getting hit with chairs.
Hey, Mom, hit me with that chair.
All right. Smash.
Okay, well, that brings me to my number two, which is, it's simple, but you gotta have it. It's the high-flying mastery of Rey Mysterio Jr.
It's not simple, man.
Well, but my number two, you know,
a simple pick.
Simple pick, yes.
Sure.
Because the high-flying people, like, again, I want the most electrifying wrestler in the world, and there's nothing that excites you more than getting on the top rope and then doing a bunch of flips at a midair and then landing on someone else. Like,
and slapping your jabroni at a guy's face.
That's right. Oh, man, if you, like, got on the top rope, did, like, a triple gainer and, like, landed on your knees, like, straddling the dude's face, and then did the hip thrust. Dude, that's a finishing move right there.
Man, you are quickly developing the wrestler for all of gay America right now.
But yeah, I just want that high-flying mastery of Rey Mysterio. And the way that he can just... I don't even know how I can describe it. The way he just kind of flips over on a... He does, like, handstands into the ropes.
Yeah.
And then flips back into a weird, like, elbow flying thing.
That's the technical term. Yeah. I love the move too, where they just hop on the bottom rope real quick and do like the spring backflip off of the bottom rope while they're still in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those wrestlers that when you actually watch him in the ring, it's not just the, you know, the finishing move and the theatrics. It's just the way that he wrestles is so entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is this guy doing? Mm-hmm. How is he doing it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's, and how is he not dead? Like,
yeah.
Like, well, no, he's dead. No.
No, I don't think he's dead.
No? Who am I thinking of?
A lot of other people.
That's right. I'm thinking of the other dead people.
Yeah,
my right. Mistake.
Yeah, you dummy.
My mistakes. Dead people.
But yeah, like just the that quickness, that agility, that high flying mastery.
Eddie Guerrero?
Is he yes.
Dead? Eddie Guerrero is who I'm thinking of. Excuse
yes.
Me.
Just like he's right there in front of you. Then the next second he's behind you doing a flip. The next second he's like above you doing a triple gainer into a quadruple Lutz,
into a jabroni face.
That's right. Like you never know where he's at. And that's what I want, man. That's
so tell me. So your wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a little bit of the physical appearance of your wrestler here. What am I looking at?
I mean, we've talked a little bit about it. He's smaller in stature, but he's still got.
So smaller in stature is what like.
Like, he's 3'6". Yeah.
I'd say he's a little bit smaller in stature. Okay.
He's like 5'4", you know?
Oh, he's real tiny.
Yeah. But that's so he can be everywhere at once, you know
do
what
you,
I mean?
I'm just to ask you, are you aware of how short 5'4 is for a full-grown male wrestler?
I might not be.
I really don't think you are.
Maybe let's say 5'8". Is that better?
Okay. Well, like, CM Punk is like, I want to say he's like 5'10".
Okay.
CM Punk is not a huge dude.
No.
CM Punk might even be like 6 feet tall.
5'4"
is, that's shorter, that's like the size of my wife.
Oh my god, I thought your wife was like 3'6".
No.
Okay. Maybe he's like, okay, he's 6'6".
So he's John Cena height?
No, honestly, he'd probably be like 5'10". He's like a little bit shorter than us.
Okay.
But he's, you know, he's got that quickness, that agility.
Okay.
So he's wiry, but he's strong too.
And half of his weight is from his triple bratwurst jabroni in his pants.
That's right. See, you got it.
Got it. Yeah. Got it.
Do I need to describe and it anymore?
Give me an
idea. I don't think so.
So he's wearing the Shawn Michaels leather chaps.
Mm-hmm.
Is he a masked wrestler?
No.
Okay, just checking.
He's like Jared Leto in Fight Club.
Oh,
he's gorgeous.
Before mushed face?
No. Yes, of course, before okay. Mushed face. Not post-mush.
He's not PM.
He is AM.
After... No. Wait,
hold on.
We're getting our mushes confused.
Oh, no. He's right. A-four mushed.
So you've got you basically have Shawn Michaels.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Okay, that's all you had to say. I have Shawn Michaels.
Pretty much, yeah.
Got it. All right, so my numero dos. This is going to be my finishing move.
Okay.
Now, a lot of people don't like this move, but it's always been one of my favorites, but... I'm not totally happy with it.
Is it the JBL clothesline?
So you know.
Yeah.
It's the Hulk Hogan leg drop.
Oh, yeah. The most Elektra snoozing move.
No, it's the pedigree.
Okay.
Because I love the pedigree. And the reason I like the pedigree so much is that not a ton of dudes do it like in like the elbow, like the people's elbow. People do elbow drops all of the time on dudes, and it's not the people's elbow. You know, it's very rarely is anyone doing something like the pedigree in the actual fight, which is good. I know it's a face buster or something, but it's not quite the pedigree.
Yeah.
And the other thing I like about the pedigree is that it is legitimately one of the most horrifying things I can imagine if you actually do it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're not doing wrestler move where you put your knees around their head to prevent it or their face from hitting the ground, mm-hmm. if you were actually in a fight with Jared Leto and you want to destroy something beautiful mm-hmm. and you just put him in between your legs, pulled his arms up, and then jumped on his face like and used his face to catch all the power and not your knees, that is a seriously fucked up move.
Holy shit, I never really thought of that before.
That's why I like the pedigree, is because it's legitimately horrifying.
Yeah.
But the thing I don't like about the pedigree is that it is kind of like the intro. It is slow to action.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You got to kick him to get him bent in the middle, and then, like, there's the pull him in between the legs, like, you flip the arms up, and the, like, it takes a while. I love things like the stunner and the RKO, where it's boom, done. Like, yeah, yeah. It comes out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to put the RKO on here just because of all the stuff online of the RKO out of nowhere,
yeah.
which are just the best. I yeah. love those. So I would love to be a part of that.
Man, watching things like the pedigree, like, to go a little bit more old school, like the Razor's Edge, where Razor Ramon, like, pretty much is about to do a powerbomb, but then he, like, lifts him up even more over the shoulders. It's like, how dumb did we have to be as children to believe this was real? You know what I mean? Even what we were talking about earlier, how Stone Cold just out of nowhere comes into the ring. You hear the glass breaking. He interrupts Vince McMahon. It's like, well, did we believe that Stone Cold impulsively ran up to the guy, like, running the music? Was like, here, play this really fast. I'm going to hurry up and, like, enter. It's like, how dumb do we have to be to believe in all this?
It's a willing suspension of your disbelief, man. To the nth degree.
Okay.
To the nth degree.
How dumb do I have to be that I still believe it?
Oh, no. No. No, Wes.
What?
It's all real, bud.
Oh, I knew it.
All real.
I always knew it.
So I'm going with the pedigree.
Okay.
Because it is ultra-violent, and there's something, I don't know, again, kind of what you're talking about, putting the dude's head in between your legs. There's something also kind of disrespectful about it, too.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, fuck you.
Hey, you know where the back of your head's at? My balls are resting on it.
My balls are on it, yeah. And I'm about to mush your face.
Yeah.
Because, again, really glad someone else named this move, because Steve the Wrestler's finishing move is called the Balls on Neck Face Musher. And I'll tell you what, that name isn't as good. It's not as good.
Although I'd be a lot more afraid of that than the pedigree. It almost sounds like a manicure. You know?
Oh, no! Here comes the Balls on Neck Face Musher! Oh, no! Oh, no!
Yeah. Well, all right, man. That's a good pick.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, we just talked about it a little bit. My number one is the finishing move, the RKO.
It is the RKO.
Yeah, because it's, again, a little high-flying, because you have to get that running start. Then he runs, and he jumps, and he grabs the neck, and then he brings the back of his neck and the back of his head to the mat. And it's great, man. I like it a lot. And that's my number one.
Wow. Terrible.
What?
Terrible explanation.
What else can I say?
What else can you say? The fact that it can strike from nowhere. From anywhere.
That's what I just said.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. High flying with the... I did. Shut up, Steve.
You didn't.
I've had enough of your shit.
Because that's the best part about the RKO is that... And actually, his little, you know, snake thing, the snake in the grass, whatever it is, right before he delivers the RKO is also...
See, I'm not a fan of that.
And neither am I, to be honest. But that's part of the move. The, like, most important thing about it is that it comes out of nowhere. That's
yeah.
And you can, like, guys jumping off the top rope. What? Did they just jump into an RKO? Sure did.
That's what happened.
Sure did. Can I RKO you onto a chair? Sure can. Can I take it off? Like, can I give you a flying RKO from the top rope? Sure can.
Can I give you an RKO as you're shopping for groceries?
Sure can. And then the aforementioned, the web series basically of people, they're just fail videos where people with Randy Orton delivering the RKO as they fall.
It's, yeah.
intensely funny.
Oh my God, those are what you're talking
That's
about.
That's what I'm talking about,
okay,
man.
I like those a lot.
Those are the best.
Yeah, yeah.
So to be able to have Steve the Wrestler be part of those, that'd be great. That'd be great. I mean, that's better than the balls on neck face musher.
But still, I don't want the balls on neck face musher to ever happen to me.
It's very true. It's very true.
What does the RKO stand for?
Is it just running knockout?
Or the Randy knockout?
I don't know.
The Randy knockout sounds also a little sex crazy.
You ready? Dude, I had her at my place last night. Totally gave her the old Randy knockout. Won't be talking to her for a while, you know what I mean?
That's right, bro.
You think that's crazy? I had a girl over, gave her the balls on neck face musher.
Oh, no.
Jabroni style.
Well, guys, I gave my girlfriend the pedigree.
Oh, that's... Yeah. Is that dog food?
Well, that's my number one. The RKO out of nowhere.
Yeah. Actually, your RKO is, I like it. That's good. That's why it's there.
Thanks, Steve.
No problem.
Yeah.
Not a problem. My number one thing, it is going to be from the world of WCW.
Oh, good. I'm glad that you're bringing this into here.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm bringing the WCW in here in the glory days, mm-hmm, when we had Goldberg, when we had, ooh, NWO with
Hollywood
Hogan.
Hulk Hogan.
Hollywood Hulk Hogan. Yep. Randy Savage was there. Scott Steiner was there.
Just a bunch of old dudes.
I know, right? But there was one dude that was, besides Goldberg, that wasn't part of NWO. He was not the Kevin Nash of NWO.
Can I guess?
Yes.
Was it Sting?
It is Sting.
Yeah!
But the thing I am bringing from Sting is the ability to strike fear into the hearts of my opponents immediately.
And how so?
Because Sting would oftentimes just appear. He would come from the rafters. He would be like lowered down behind guys. He would come out from underneath the ring. He would enter from in the audience. So the guys would be staring down, like you'd hear the music. And if it were my wrestler, you'd hear the ksh, da da da. So the guys would immediately turn to the ramp, get all jacked up, and like, okay, all right, we're gonna fight Steve the Wrestler. I hope my neck is ready for some balls and get some face mushing going on. I hope they're ready. And all of a sudden, here comes Steve the Wrestler out from underneath the ring with a bat or something standing right behind them. And as they turn, they always do the ultra scared face, the shocked and scared face. The, oh! Oh! What are you doing here? The ability to instantly strike fear into my opponents is a very valuable skill to have.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, you get to mingle with the crowd a little bit more. You're running down those stairs. You've got all those people dressed like Steve the Wrestler, so I could be any one of those.
Well, it sounds like in after Wes the Wrestler, you know, after all the women's panties are ablaze and in ashes, well, you know, your wrestler will help cool them off, it sounds like.
Oh, is that right?
That's right.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, your homoerotic extraordinaire wrestler is busy giving the most mundane finisher. He's like, this is where I shake his hand and then I pin him. Sir, could you please lay on the ground so I could gyrate my penis by your face and then the match will be over? Thank you. I will be appearing from shadows and delivering my balls to the necks of villains.
I'm sorry. I didn't know your wrestler was Robert Patrick from Double Dragon.
That's him, man.
Oh, wow.
It does. What a reference, by the way. Very nice.
No, you're welcome.
I didn't understand at first. I had to realize it was the T-1000 from Double Dragon is what you meant.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, man. I want my wrestler to not be bound by the laws of entering via the ramp all the time.
Okay.
Hearing the music, doing the slow walk down the ramp, trying to get some ladies' attention. No, no, no. I want the guy that is instant action coming from anywhere and everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
See, this is why I should have the RKO, because I could be dropping it from the rafters.
Well,
dropping an RKO from the rafters.
Oh my God, dude, you're gonna kill everybody.
Yes. Duh!
Oh, yeah, okay.
That's actually Steve the Wrestler's true signature, is murdering his opponents. If I don't get a shot at WrestleMania, I'm literally going to kill every wrestler in this company. Is that understood, Vince? Do you get that, Triple H? I'm going to kill everybody until I have that belt.
Wow. Wow, man, what a great finishing move.
Thank you.
Yeah, just the stab in the face.
And then actually they would call it, it'd be called like the Perminator. Because it's permanent. They are dead. That's it. And I also give their hair a perm.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Again, pedigree, the Perminator, these things do not sound very intimidating.
Well, get the pedigree out of your head. Because that's not what it's called, baby. It's called the balls on neck face musher. Right. Get it right.
Okay, I'll get it through my thick skull.
Thank you. Otherwise, you'll be getting my fist through your thick skull. See, I don't have those mic skills.
No, you don't. All right, well, my creator wrestler in review. This is Wes the Wrestler here. My number five is Shawn Michaels' entrance music and entrance parade down the aisle. My number four is The Rock's charisma / mic skills. My number three is the Val Venus Jabroninator. My number two is the high-flying skills of Rey Mysterio. My number one is the RKO out of nowhere.
God. Excuse me. My number five is the Stone Cold Glass Shatter.
Yeah.
Because it's coming out of nowhere. It's coming out of everywhere you don't know. Number four is the mic skills of one The Rock. Number three, I'm going with the extremeness of Mankind / Mick Foley. Number two, I'm going with the balls on neck face smusher, a.k.a. the pedigree. And number one, I'm going for the ability to appear from anywhere and everywhere and strike fear into the hearts of my opponents before I murder them. I'm taking that from Sting from WCW.
Oh, did he murder a lot of people in WCW?
Well, I'm not taking the murder part.
Okay.
That's actually why WCW folded up. It's because Sting murdered everybody.
Steve, Eric Bishop's like, Sting, Bubala, honey, sweetie, you gotta stop killing our most famous wrestlers.
And murder.
Oh, God. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Again, we love hearing what you guys have to say. So please write us in your top five things that will go into your create a wrestler. But it has to include a finishing move. That is the only caveat
it's gotta
to
have
top
it.
Five.
Hey, when is WrestleMania? What time of year is that? Like beginning of summer, roughly?
I actually don't know.
I think I watched WrestleMania this last year.
Yeah.
I want to say it's like May-ish, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
So I'm also going to put out a several month in advance plea to you guys. I want to do another wrestling one once we get a little bit closer to WrestleMania. So let that percolate a little bit.
Sure.
So give us a good wrestling one we can do in a couple months as well.
Sure. You can leave a comment here on oneofus.net. You can email us at 5playnet@gmail.com. But Steve, as always, I'm Wes.
I'm Steve the Wrestler.
That was 5.
And we're out! Ooh, yeah!